Hello and welcome to More or Less on the BBC World Service. We're the programme all about the numbers all around us in the news and in life, and I'm Tim Harford. We know that obesity is a risk factor when it comes to getting seriously ill or dying from COVID-19, but how big a risk is it, and how much difference would it have made to the death toll if we were thinner? Stuart MacDonald, who's an actuary with the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries in the UK, has been looking at the numbers for us. We'll look at the UK. It's one of the most overweight countries in Europe and has had a high COVID death toll. And then we'll look at a country with an even higher obesity rate, the US. But first, the UK.
20% of the UK population is clinically obese, so that's one person out of five. That's significantly higher than for the EU overall, where 16% are obese. That's one person out of six. And it's almost double the obesity rate in Italy.
One person in nine is obese in Italy, which has one of the lowest obesity rates in Europe at around 11%. The UK is at the other end of the scale, alongside Turkey, Malta, Latvia and Hungary. To find out how much impact this makes on coronavirus, Stuart looked at Open Safely, a huge study which looked at more than 17 million UK patients and tried to figure out how different factors affected their risk of dying from the disease.
Within that study, obesity is divided into three classes. Class one is those with BMI of 30 to 35. That's the majority of obese people belong to. And the risk for them is 5% higher than for people of a healthy weight. Class two then is BMI of 35 to 40. The risk for those people is 40% higher than people of a healthy weight. And class three is those with a BMI over 40. And the risk there is 92% higher than people for a healthy weight, so nearly double.
If you are severely obese, then you have a very substantially elevated risk. But most people who are in that lower category, the risk is elevated, but it's not dramatic.
That's absolutely right, Tim. Once we allow for the proportion of individuals in each group, we can determine that obesity alone increases risk by 24% compared to someone who is not obese, but otherwise shares the same demographic and medical characteristics.
But of course, not everyone in the UK is obese. So based on the proportion of people who are,
that gives us a hazard ratio for the UK overall of 105%. So we're saying that the risk of death from COVID-19 is 5% higher than it would be if no one in the UK was obese. The equivalent number for Europe overall is 4%, and for Italy is 3%.
Okay, so when you plug all that into the death toll that we're talking about, the tens of thousands of people, how much difference would it have made if the UK had obesity rates that were closer to Italy's or even just the EU average?
There have been 62,100 excess deaths in the UK to the 24th of July. That suggests that if we had the same obesity profile as the European average, we'd have had around 600 fewer deaths, so about 1% less. If we had the same obesity profile as Italy, we'd have had around 1,300 fewer deaths, so around 2% less.
If we were substantially slimmer then, much lower obesity rates, I mean, this would have saved, if we trust this data, this would have saved hundreds of lives, but it wouldn't really have changed the overall shape of the epidemic or the overall conclusion that the UK, unfortunately, has been very hard hit.
I would agree with that conclusion entirely.
But how about in the US, where obesity rates are much higher, around one in three?
Using the same approach, we can see that the additional risk for the USA is around 7% more than a country where nobody was obese.
Data from the Centers for Disease Control shows that the US now has over 200,000 excess deaths.
If the USA had the same obesity profile as the EU, they would have had around 5,700 fewer deaths, around 3% less. And if they had the same obesity profile as Italy, they would have around 8,000 fewer deaths.
That's around 4% less.
So again, the conclusions are similar. Whilst it's clear that obesity is a relevant factor for COVID-19 and affects individuals' risk, it's having a limited impact at population level.
Stuart MacDonald of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries in the UK. You can't see because I'm on the radio, but I'm actually doing a really good poker face right now. But there's more to poker than an impassive gaze and nerves of steel. The game also requires some heavy-duty mathematics to play at the highest level. Science writer and psychologist Maria Konnikova set out to explore poker and its life lessons a few years ago. She loved poker so much and was so good at it that she ended up becoming a professional player. And she's written a book all about it called The Biggest Bluff: How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win.
There was an Italian named Girolamo Cardano who was a gambler. We think that he actually wrote the first ever description of what came to be poker. And he was the father, in many ways, of probability. And the reason that he was actually able to discover probability, so to speak, is because of cards. And he saw what people were actually doing at the time to figure out how they should bet. And that was consult the stars, go to a soothsayer. And he thought, wait a second, can I actually use the fact that we know how many cards we're playing with, that we know how many sides a die has, to try to figure out how I can actually make decisions based on something that will actually guarantee that over the long term, I'm going to win more money? And that was where probability came from.
The new generation of poker players, Maria says, are very mathematically minded.
All of the young guns are people who use something that didn't exist 15 years ago, which is solvers. So there are these software programs now that run thousands and thousands and thousands of Monte Carlo simulations.
And a Monte Carlo simulation, we should be clear, is when you're letting a computer effectively roll the dice or spin the roulette wheel many, many times to see the pattern of outcomes that you get.
Exactly. So what it's doing is actually just running through thousands and thousands of iterations of what might actually happen in order to determine what is the game theoretically optimal thing to do at any given point in time. I have to caveat this by saying that psychology is always a factor in this, because that approximation also depends on assumptions about what kinds of hands your opponents play, what they might do in certain situations.
One of the ideas that really grabbed me from your book was the idea of going on tilt. Tell us about that.
So tilt is this beautiful term, which means infusing emotion into your thought process. And we do this all the time. We are very rarely GTO, game theory optimal, thinkers in real life. And what a good player does is recognize when she is experiencing certain emotions and account for them, actually take them out of the equation so that she can still make the best possible rational decision. Our brains are really, really, really bad at statistics when it comes to real life. Poker is a good corrective because it forces you to think in statistical terms and to start learning, you know, what does 1% feel like? What does 5% feel like? What about 10? What about 75? You realize 1% is huge. And I get very frustrated when people say, 1%, that's not that much. I want to say, do you know how many billions of people there are in the world? Do you actually know what 1% means?
Maria Konnikova, author of The Biggest Bluff. And that is all we have time for, but please keep your questions and comments coming in to moreorless@bbc.co.uk. Until next time, goodbye.